You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our SmartCast Micro Learning Podcast series titled Tackling Barriers to Care in Ophthalmology, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in Academics, Research, and Clinical Practice. This series is hosted by Dr. Judy Kim, a professor of ophthalmology and visual sciences and vitreoretinal specialist at the Eye Institute of the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Let's get started with today's episode.
Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Dr. Judy Kim, a retina specialist, and I will be the host of today's podcast entitled, What Color Are You? How to Identify and Best Use Your Style to Understand Others and Improve as a Leader. Joining me today is Dr. Tamara Fountain, who is a past president of the American Academy of Ophthalmology and a professor and section chair emeritus of oculofacial plastic surgery at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago, Illinois. Dr. Fountain is also a longtime close friend of mine who I have known since she was a resident at Wilmer and I was a medical student at Johns Hopkins. We won't say how long ago, though. I am delighted to have her join us today on the topic of becoming and being a leader and how it relates to our conversation series on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tamara, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Judy.
Tamara, people have different leadership styles, and these styles may change depending on the situation, as you know. And there are many ways to describe these leadership styles. And one way to talk about them is to refer by color. And during the research of this topic, I saw anywhere between 4 to 9 different colors. But on the 4 different color leadership styles, for instance, a red leader is strong and purposeful. Yellow is enthusiastic and persuasive. Blue is precise, deliberate, and analytical. And green is encouraging and collaborative. And I think understanding one's leadership style may help us to understand how we lead and interact with others. So, Tamara, what would be your leadership color? And how have you used that style to help you lead?
So, you just described 4 colors, and each of them with its own emphasis. And as I look at this, I think your leadership style in many ways is really governed by your personality. But as you mentioned at the top, your style, your leadership style is going to reflect the context as well as the culture of the organization that you're leading. And any specific leader will have to recognize when a certain emphasis in their leadership style is needed. Are we talking about a crisis management, urgent situation like the killing of George Floyd and the rubber bullet injuries that we saw in the protests after his killing? Are we talking about rebranding and rethinking our mission statement, which might be a more collaborative consensus type focus? So I really think it takes some ability to read the room in order to be the most effective leader. And I've seen in my experience being watching other leaders, I've seen them shift their focus depending on the goals and the tasks at hand. So I do like the idea of all these colors because it helps us to recognize the different ways that many effective leaders can do their jobs. But I don't think I'm any one color. And I think most of us also will shapeshift depending on the situation.
Yeah, I agree. I think we shapeshift. And also knowing what our dominant color is may help us to work across to other personalities or other ways of doing that we may be weak at, but we at least have an open mind about accepting, don't you think?
Indeed. And I think in that context, as you talk about finding your leadership style, I think it's important also to be receptive and even actively solicit feedback on your style, whether it's the technicians and staff in your office or your department or the other board members around the table, if you're leading a board of directors, I think having somebody who's willing and create a safety zone for them to do so, to give you some feedback and constructive feedbacks. I mean, I've gotten much over the years myself, and it's never easy to hear, but that's where your growth will take place. And I know many people will rely on executive coaching, and that person is really in the business. You're paying them to do this, to make you a better leader. But I also think you can achieve that kind of feedback also from your peers if you're willing to hear it.
Yeah, I think you emphasize an important point. To be a good leader, I think we also have to be a good listener and listen to our people in the room. Also be willing to listen to positive as well as instructive feedback. And sometimes that's hard to do, as you said, but it seems that being a listener is an important quality of a leader.
Indeed, indeed.
I want to go into our next topic. This might be a little more personal, Tamara, but I know you're a very honest and open-minded person, so I'm going to go and ask you, have you encountered any difficulty or bias due to you being a Black woman, being Black or being a woman during your rise to leadership or during your leadership even?
I would think it would be unrealistic to think that it hasn't played a role. We are all recipients of biases, sometimes in a positive direction, sometimes in a negative direction. I think that there are people who are supportive, but there are also situations where you can just feel the undercurrents, perhaps I've heard people call it the soft bigotry of low expectations. They make a snap judgment about what your abilities are or what you represent. And so I've always recognized that. I think even more so as an African-American physician, I think when you're from an underrepresented group, you deal almost daily with people who are sizing you up in a first encounter. And I think you start to recognize how you are sometimes starting out at a disadvantage. And I think many of us who are in that position almost naturally, until you ask that question, I really didn't think about it this way, but you almost are starting behind the starting line in some ways, and knowing that you have to kind of catch up and make up for the fact that this person is sometimes making a snap judgment about your background, about your abilities. And so it just has become natural to me. I don't think that I've ever experienced overt discrimination in that regard. Certainly assumptions, and I'm guilty of these myself. But for instance, I remember going back to residency back in the day, it's hard to think about this now, when people got admitted the night before their cataract surgery. And as the on-call resident, our job was to go up and to make sure that they had their physical exam and their testing was done. And I remember I got called to a patient's room who had been operated on. So they stayed after their cataract surgery in-house too, which is amazing for me to think about. But I got called into this patient's room and I was in the middle of working up other patients. So I actually had a stethoscope around my neck. I had my long white coat on, which if you remember at Wilmer, it was kind of the opposite. The younger trainees had the long coats and the more mature and the more seasoned attendings had the short coats.
Right.
Yep. And so I walked into this gentleman's room and I think I was called because he was having some sort of GI upset. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but needed medical attention. So I walked into the room and he looked up from what he was doing and kind of dismissively pointed to the tray, his food tray on his table, saying, "Oh my God, yeah, thank you so much. It's been, that tray's been sitting there for an hour. Thanks for clearing it for me." And I put a smile on and he looked up and saw that I was a Black woman and just made a snap decision because a lot of the dietary people in Hopkins Hospital were Black women.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And so he, I said, okay, well, I'm going to make sure that someone does get that, but I'm actually here as, you know, I'm the doctor and I'm here because you were complaining about whatever it was. And he was quite pleasant after that. You know, those little things, I think people today might call those microaggressions. At the time, I just said, you know what? We all are products of our past experiences, and we get through this world by making shortcuts. We do. We all do. We couldn't survive if we didn't. And he just made a shortcut. And I just pointed out to him that I wasn't there for that and went on about our business. So I think most of my experiences are similar to that. People make a snap judgment, but I correct them and we move on. And it's nothing more obvious than that. But I also recognize that there are other people, colleagues, comrades, who haven't had such pleasant experiences. So I'm very sensitive to that too. And I think it's important that we all recognize the assumptions that we make on a daily basis and try to overcome those and recognize how that can make other people feel.
So what did that patient say when he found out that you were the doctor?
I don't remember, you know, I don't remember him apologizing. I wasn't expecting an apology. I just wanted him to know why when I left the room, his tray table was still going to be there. And that's not why I was there. So I want to make sure he wasn't upset with that. So I don't remember. I just do remember him assuming, even in my white coat, even with a stethoscope around my neck, that I was there to remove his dinner tray.
It's sort of interesting you say that, because I remember one of my colleague, his black retina specialist, and he said, you know, I'm always amazed why people think, why is it so surprising that I speak well at a meeting? They come to me and say, oh my goodness, you were so eloquent and et cetera. And he says, why would that be so surprising for you?
That's what I talk about. That's what I meant by the soft bigotry of low expectations. So yes, I've gotten that too.
How do you then overcome these soft bigotry or low expectations or people assuming and making that quick, you know, cut to something that's not true? How do you prepare yourself, or what kind of mechanisms have you developed, you know, to overcome that?
It kind of depends. It kind of depends on the situation. If I think that my remark will not land in a pointed way, I will maybe say something to the effect of, oh, you didn't think I could speak? That's interesting. I wonder why you would think that. You know, with a smile on my face, I am not looking to make people feel bad. You know, I think if our goal is to make this a more inclusive society, we're really looking for people to just, I think, listen. And I think the easiest way to make people stop listening is to accuse them of being a bad person. So I just really try to point out things to them.
Yes, I think we all need to be more open-minded and learn from each other. Let me go back to the leadership. What do you think was key or important factors of you becoming a leader?
It's interesting that you talked about earlier about how the role of listening. I tell young mentees that, you know, you want to always recognize when there's an opportunity. You want to show up, and then you want to make your opinions known. You want to contribute, because if you just show up and are quiet, then you're not benefiting the organization that you're showing up to be part of. And even though you're young and maybe inexperienced in a new leadership organization, your viewpoint is nonetheless very valid, in some cases even more so because of your inexperience. So I always encourage younger or junior members to speak up.
So the older leaders should listen, and the younger members should speak up.
Exactly. But it's interesting, as you go on in leadership, you do less, at least that was my experience, especially for the academy. When you're president of the academy, you do a lot of listening and less speaking. And I think this is a good point for leaders as well, as to recognize the gravity and the impact of your voice because of your position, and wield your voice judiciously. When you're wanting to open up a discussion about an important topic, I think it's important, this is my personal feeling, I think it's important that you hold your views until you hear from others. And when you solicit views from others, it's important perhaps to solicit those from more junior members, because they're not going to feel as comfortable speaking their mind if they've heard other people in the room express a different viewpoint. So kind of work from the bottom up, because you want to hear all the opinions. And if you haven't heard something during a discussion that's a dissenting view, you ought to seek it out, because all groups will make better decisions when you hear all viewpoints, even negative ones.
Finally, then, Tamara, do you have any advice for our listeners who aspire to become a leader, especially those who are in the underrepresented group? Any advice?
You have allies, you have advocates, you have mentors. They may not look like you, but they're people who are vested in promoting you because they see something in you worth promoting. So utilize your network. Recognize opportunities. When you are in a position in a group, speak up, because that's the only way you're going to get recognized and remembered by somebody. And I think recognizing those, utilizing your network, speaking your mind, and contributing are the foundational, the foundation blocks for good leadership as well as membership in organizations.
So network, say yes, do a good job, and speak up. I think those are all great advice, Tamara. Well, we've had such a great conversation, but this must come to an end. I would like to thank Dr. Tamara Fountain for being with us here today and sharing with us regarding her journey of becoming and being a leader. She's been an amazing leader and amazing person in so many different ways, and I feel so fortunate to call her my friend. Tamara, we appreciate you providing your insights on these issues with us today.
It was my pleasure to be here, Judy. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening. Please join us again soon for another episode in this series discussing strategies to optimize diversity and inclusion in eye care. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. And a special thank you to our grant supporter, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, Inc., who provided an independent medical education grant for this activity.